Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Well, personally, I think, I'll just paraphrase the message that I sent to my friend in Las Vegas earlier today. I have to edit myself here just in case I say something I shouldn't. Because I feel very strongly, it is total effing BS that we can't watch football on Monday nights anymore until blanking September. But I'm kind of excited because we have TGL Golf. And if you've never seen that before, Tiger and Rory are going to go at one another. They kind of started this whole thing. It's a virtual league. It actually caught me off guard to a certain extent. It's weird because they tee off, they hit their approach shots from, you know, a simulator off of real grass. And then they have, this is all done in a stadium where the greens can change, you know, from one hole to the other. And they chip up, you know, onto the green, off the surface, and Dan Reardon's all on top of this. It caught me off guard. Big match tonight. I actually think it gets started here in about 20 minutes, but he'll join us after the bottom of the hour. In Share, CBS Tech News expert on the new Chinese app, DeepSeek. That's coming up as well. I opened up the Wall Street Journal this morning to see John Seiler writing a piece. We've talked with John multiple times about DEI. He's a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Now, was that a promotion, Seiler? Congratulations, by the way. How are you? Oh, I got to press in. So that's something new at the Manhattan Institute, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm still doing pretty much the same thing, but I'm really happy to have joined, this august group of writers and journalists. So I'm very happy to be representing the Manhattan Institute now.
Well, and you earned that, and you've got to feel good because, look, what's been discussed more than anything else probably in the last week outside of deportation, immigration, it's DEI, John, right?
Absolutely. You know, with Trump's executive order, things are changing, and they're changing rapidly. And you can see how universities are just going to have to totally rethink the way that they do hiring, the way that they do admissions. Many of them are scared, and a lot of them, frankly, should be scared.
Yeah, so you highlight in that Wall Street Journal piece that I mentioned, the University of Colorado. Before we get to that, let me just say this. Last week when I'm driving home one night, I wanted to kind of sample CNN a little bit more than usual last week, and I heard Erin Burnett talking about a lot of this stuff. And I tweeted at her when I got home, and I'm under no, you know, illusion that she saw my tweet, John. But she was doing this interview on DEI in a way that led me to believe, Erin Burnett, anchor at CNN, she's got to be a little smart, that she'd never, ever read the New York Times piece from a couple of months ago, which, by the way, highlighted a lot of the things that you've been, you know, writing about and highlighting for the past couple of years. But if you had taken time to read that or maybe your piece in the Wall Street Journal about what's happening at the University of Colorado, I think the focus of your questions would be a little different. Some of the folks in the legacy media act like this is just about, you know, an equal playing field and there's not more nefarious aspects of this, which, of course, John, you've been highlighting for a while now.
Yeah, so I think for a lot of people who are not in an organization like a university or a corporation that has a really heavy-handed DEI program, what do you think of DEI? You might think that, well, diversity, that sounds nice.
Right.
Equity, that sounds like equality. Inclusion, of course, you know, who's against inclusion? You have to kind of be a psychopath not to be for inclusion. They all sound great in the abstract. And so it makes sense that some people have just never thought about it. But what's interesting, what I really think is actually the case, though they will never admit it, I think that many, if not a majority, of professors in academia and of, good, upstanding, implicitly progressive professionals in the corporate world, their reaction to the Trump executive order is a sigh of relief. I really think that the people who are closest, the people who are affected by these policies day in and day out, my impression is that they actually see that this stuff has gone too far, and that even though it sounds great and in the abstract, sure, you can defend the term, you know, there are big, big problems with how it actually plays out and what the ideas actually mean in practice.
Right.
And that's what my reporting has really shown.
Absolutely. So that kind of brings us to Colorado. I want you to describe the Faculty Diversity Action Plan. And did you have to go through like a Freedom of Information request to get some of this?
Yeah. So the University of Colorado in 2020 started this special hiring program where the university said, we're going to give departments extra funds, you know, enough money to pay salaries if they apply to do special hiring that's based that's designed to promote diversity. And now, usually when people say designed to promote diversity, they kind of have to dissemble a little bit. They kind of have to dress up the language or so that it doesn't sound like they're breaking the law, because it is 100% against the law to simply say we are going to hire someone because they are of this particular race. That is not allowed. But
but apparently it's allowed at the University of Colorado, right?
Yeah. So what's remarkable, and what I learned before I made my public records request, was that at the University of Colorado, this program, it was basically very straightforwardly a race-based hiring program. They sort of solicited departments to say how this hire would advance the hiring of underrepresented scholars. And the university was very clear that underrepresented did not just mean people of all sorts of demographic characteristics. It narrowly meant people of very particular races, and that was in the application.
Well, let me read some of that. So they said, this is quotes, the faculty said, our aim is specifically to hire a Black, Indigenous, or Latinx, there's your red flag right there, faculty member. And then you describe how, you know, they were looking at emphasizing hiring Black, Indigenous, Asian American, Latinx, and Pacific Islanders at these departments. Well, by the way, here's a question for you. How is Black, Indigenous, Asian American, all the, how is that in any way, shape, or form on par with Latinx? Just out of curiosity, just because of the X?
Yeah, you know, these ever evolving terms to describe race and ethnicity, it's really remarkable, and it's kind of a weird outgrowth of the whole DEI frame. But what these documents revealed was really remarkable, and I should emphasize that. This is a systemic approach to doling out racial preferences. We call it, you know, if you want to say it differently, this is the systemic discrimination where professors, department chairs, and upper-level administrators were very explicit about hiring on the basis of race, and they put that into these documents and said, we are going to propose a hire. And these documents that I acquired, these were all the ones that were successfully funded and successfully led to hires. So we know that the administration turned around and said, we are going to grant you permission to make hires on the basis of race. Document after document basically explicitly say that. That was the purpose. That's not the only concern to race here, but it is really remarkable to see a whole university basically work in tandem to break the law. And that's something that should have them very, very nervous after the Trump executive order directs his agencies to make lists of institutions to investigate for the violating the Civil Rights Act. This seems like a very clear-cut case and a very good option for any agency head that wants to compile one of these lists.
Absolutely. And then let me close with this, John. I don't know how you'd respond here. This is a new member of Congress. We miss dearly Cori Bush because she was sent packing and she gave me a lot of material. But we got a guy who's a former St. Louis prosecutor, Wesley Bell. I'm told that, you know, he's different than Cori Bush. I'm told that he may vote differently. But here's what he said about DEI. What part of DEI does Trump have an issue with? Diversity, in quotes, equity, in quotes, or the idea of, quote, inclusion, asking for a friend, actually a lot of friends. And then he does, diversity is our superpower. My response to Congressman Bell, who, by the way, listens to this show, we have a good authority, is we get that a lot of your constituents are lazy and they don't want to work and they're counting on preferences to help them be lazy and not want to work. But then there's the rest of us, black, white, other friends. And my hashtag was, you just want the racial quotas and those days are over. That was my answer to Wesley Bell. But that's a fundamental either complete lie on his part, acting like he doesn't know what DEI is, or worse, he doesn't know what DEI is.
Yeah, you know, here's the problem. In order to really advance diversity in the way that a lot of these advocates want to, you have to use racial preferences. That creates an issue right off the bat because that means that you're looking at something other than the traditional markers of excellence that you would usually be using to decide who gets what position. But because that is not allowed in the era when it comes to hiring, they also have to make up this sort of framework that says we're not just hiring on the basis of diversity, we're also hiring on the basis of your commitment to diversity,
yes,
or your ability to look at things through the lens of race or critical race theory. And so not only does it distort our notion of excellence or the ability to assess people on the basis of excellence, it also meant, in the case of Colorado, that you had disciplines contort themselves into all these weird emphases. You know, in one instance, a department proposes hiring a professor of German studies who looks at folklore and fairy tales through the lens of critical race theory.
Of course.
And that's
of
the
course.
Kind of thing that kills academia.
And it should kill academia, right? It's unbelievable, but you always highlight this stuff. John Siler, thank you so much, and congratulations on the position at the Manhattan Institute. We got Ilya Shapiro over there as well. Good luck with everything, John. Keep up the good work. You know I'm a fan. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark.
Right, take care. We got Ian Scheer explaining this new Chinese app coming up next.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
A very well-established fan of professional golf and just playing golf. And I really, a couple weeks ago, was caught off guard. I did not know much about this TGL Golf League, which is, it's unfair to call it just a virtual league because they do use real putting services and they chip up from around the green. But Tiger and Rory kind of came up with this and they're squaring off tonight on ESPN. So Dan Reardon's going to give us all the details of that coming up in just a couple of minutes. But we got to talk with Ian Scheer from CBS News, tech expert. We love having Ian on because woke up this morning to news of another Chinese app that's taking over the planet, DeepSeek. And Ian will sort it all out for us this afternoon. How are you? Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
So what's up with this? What's going on? And why did the stock market tank today because of this?
I was going to say, not quite a happy Monday for an NVIDIA holder, that's for sure. So, you know, generally speaking, the concern that has kind of sparked is that this company called DeepSeek has said that it can create an AI that is equivalent to the best ones that are coming out of the United States, right? OpenAI's ChatGPT, Google's Gemini, Meta AI, stuff like that. But do it, it's able to be created at a fraction of the cost. Generally speaking, it's believed that creating an AI costs somewhere between $100 million and $1 billion of investment. Most companies don't have that sitting around in their pocket change, and so they are instead forced to go to ChatGPT or to Google or to Meta or whomever else, Microsoft, you name them, to essentially access their AIs and use them in their work. So the idea now that anyone practically with at least $6 million in the bank can build an AI, which represents a lot of companies, by the way, that challenges the supremacy of a lot of these startups and a lot of these companies that up until now have been the center of how we think about AI.
So when I see a story in the Wall Street Journal, I just want to read you the first line. I want you, you're going to have to dumb this down for me because I don't quite get it. A Chinese artificial intelligence company has Silicon Valley marveling at how its programmers nearly matched American rivals despite using inferior chips. So that part, the inferior chips part, and they're doing this with less technology, or is that not accurate?
Well, you may remember that the previous administration, the Biden administration, and continuing under Trump, have restricted the export of NVIDIA chips. Right, NVIDIA is one of the most highly valued companies on the planet. It makes the chips that make a lot of the AI stuff run. And their best chips had actually come under U.S. export controls, saying that they cannot be sold to China because we didn't want to possibly give China access to something that what the Biden administration argued, and I'm sure Trump will continue, could be a national security threat. So that is why China has been always working with what are considered inferior chips. Still, despite that, apparently, they've been able to create this thing that is arguably on par with the stuff we have, which, is both a national security conversation, but as you point out, is also a stock market conversation.
Right. But I'm not good at math. All right. That's been well established. That's why I talk on the radio. This is another line that confuses me. You addressed this earlier. You said that, the cost here is dramatically different. But what they said in this piece is the DeepSeek folks said training one of its latest models cost $5.6 million compared with the $100 million to $1 billion range cited last year. So that's not just a small difference. That's, that's $100 million or $1 billion difference, right?
Yeah. And part of it is the cost in human beings, right? Okay. You need a lot of data whizzes and these really, really intelligent people who understand how to train an AI to be able to do that. They cost money. They're usually one of the biggest costs. The other cost is also the chips themselves. For example, it's estimated that OpenAI, right, the massive ChatGPT company, needed at least 16,000 of NVIDIA's best chips to be able to build ChatGPT as it is today. Apparently, DeepSeek was able to do that with an eighth of the number of them, 2,000 chips. So, it's not that NVIDIA is not getting business. They are. But that it's going to be significantly less required than maybe a lot of people had thought. Now, that doesn't mean that it's the truth, right? This is just the first announcement of this thing. And there's a lot of analysis that needs to be done and market research and all these other things. But if that pronouncement turns out to be true, then it's possible that NVIDIA's business is not going to get as large as people were betting.
Right. But it's also possible, and, I cited the Wall Street Journal, so I can cite something else. Dan Gallagher has a column, and you're going to probably hear more of this in the next couple of days. I'm curious, about your opinion, is that, look, Wall Street's really good, and I'm not asking you to be a financial analyst here. Wall Street's really good at sell-offs and panic and stuff like that. They tend to change in the following days, but there's a chance here that the reaction is somewhat overblown, right?
Yes, and by the way, I'm a huge fan of Dan Gallagher. He's a really smart writer at the Wall Street Journal, I'm just going to say. But he makes up a very good point, is that, you know, as I pointed out, thousands of NVIDIA chips still represent a massive amount of money. Maybe it's not as much money, but here's the other element of it, is that we don't know whether or not how many other companies are now going to say, oh, if I can build an AI for a fraction of the cost that it was thought to be before, how many more companies are now going to want to buy these chips?
Yeah.
Right. So things may even out in the end. And as he points out, and Dan has seen this as much as I have, we've sat next to each other many years, and we would watch, you know, Netflix stock drop after some concern came out. And sure enough, right, Netflix would then recover and go back up.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's what's going to happen here, right, because I am not a crystal ball person. I do not know the future. Otherwise, I would not be talking to you. I'd be making money on Wall Street.
But that's
the thing he's arguing, is that, you know, sometimes panic is its own thing that doesn't fit reality.
And I think that's true. But how does this, I guess the question would be, tie in any way, shape, or form? And I don't know if you have any thoughts on what happened last week. You got the tech giants up there, including a St. Louis guy and Sam Altman. And then the next day, Elon kind of goes rogue and says, hey, that's not going to work. So what do you make of all that? And does that tie in at all with everything with this chip?
Well, it doesn't exactly tie in, but it's part of this broader, I would call, elbowing that happens in the tech industry every day, where people are trying to challenge the top companies, right? And Elon Musk especially wants to be seen as one of the leaders in AI. And he's not honestly seen that way, right? His AI company, xAI, is not mentioned in the same breath as Google's Gemini, Meta's AI, or ChatGPT. So he has a reason for elbowing against other people. But also, there is this sense that if you can unlock this answer, right, figure out what it is that's special about AI and get everyone to use it, you may have invented the next iPhone, right? And as we know, even though Samsung and all these other companies make phones too, it is Apple that gets the majority, the lion's share, more than the lion's share, of the profits in the phone industry. And people want that again.
Interesting. Hey, before I let you go, this is great, by the way. Helps us out a lot. On the TikTok front, which I think we talked about the last time, had John. Anything going on there? You get the 75-day grace period and trying to figure out what's going on next. Is there any indication of what that next step might be now?
It's really hard. I mean, I've been listening to pretty much everything that Trump has said since this has started. And what's been interesting to me is he talks about a lot of people who call him and talk about it. But the problem that I think they're running up against, and the White House has not been very clear about this, which is why I think this is the case, is that we're talking about one of the biggest platforms of all time, right? Billions and billions of dollars. There are not that many people who have that much money sitting in their couch cushions to be able to actually buy it. And so as a result, you end up with a lot of companies and people who already own social media companies, and then suddenly they're becoming monopolies by buying TikTok.
It does seem that
way,
right?
Yeah, so that's part of the tough thing here. There are a couple of weird examples, like Mr. Beast of YouTube fame, who said he wants to become the CEO of whatever the new company is. I don't know if that'll happen. Perplexity, which is an AI company that's kind of a second banana to ChatGPT, has made an offer and suggested that the government could have a financial stake in it, which would create its own kind of questions about government involvement in a media company. But it's all getting very mushy, which it typically is, but not usually in public.
Did you say that guy's name was Mr. Beef?
Beast, as in, you know, that. So his name is Jimmy Donaldson, Mr. Beast. He is one of the most subscribed people on YouTube. He actually very notably made an agreement with Amazon to do he does like game show type stuff with people all the time.
Oh, okay.
And to do one of the biggest game shows ever. But, you know, the question, of course, is does he really make sense as the person who would run this thing? Yeah, maybe he's good at YouTube, and maybe, you know, he also makes chocolate bars. Maybe he does that. But can he run one of the biggest social networks in the world? That's a different skill.
Yeah. My only question is, I'm going to keep calling him Mr. Beef because I like that a little better.
You can.
Yeah, I'm
going
to do it. Hey, Ian, great to start the week with you. Thank you so much. We'll talk soon. Keep us posted. Keep tracking it. Thank you.
Absolutely.
All right, and say hi to Mr. Beef, too. Oh, I like this song a lot. New one I picked out for the bumper rotation. Guy by the name of Sam Fender from Across the Pond. People Watching, the name of the song. Of course, I publish the bumper music every day on the X formerly Twitter. You can always find my handle at Mark Rudin KFTK. I'm going to put that list up in a few minutes, actually. But first, we're going to talk with Dan Reardon, our golf expert. I started watching this TGL Golf League a couple of weeks ago, and I felt very stupid because I love professional golf. I follow the PGA Tour. Not as much LIV, but I'm like, wait a second, this is kind of fun. They're doing a virtual, you know, golf match, but then they're putting on a real surface. So it's very interesting, and there's a pretty big match tonight. We thought Dan would be great to explain all of this to us. He's the golf expert on our sister station, CamoX. Dan Reardon, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Mark. And by the way, the first thing we need to let people know that TGL doesn't have Tiger in the first. The T is for the Tomorrow Golf League. So people think it's the Tiger League, and he and Rory are huge investors. But this is, it's not the Tiger Golf League. It's the Tomorrow Golf League.
So as I indicated, a couple weeks ago, I got ESPN on, and I'm looking at this thing, and I see, you know, them teeing off in the virtual space, and then they have an actual green and putting surface that they play on. The competition was fierce. It seemed to be pretty interesting. You got to see some of the personalities shine. So let's just kind of start with the format here and maybe some background and what they're trying to do here, Dan.
Well, first of all, they're filling Mondays through the leading into the heat of the golf season. This whole wraps up with their championship, I think, on the 25th of March. They've got six teams, four players on each team, and they're marquee names. This is all PGA Tour players, no LIV players involved. And each match is a 15-hole match play format. And the easiest way to describe match play is each hole is worth a point. So at the end, whoever has the most points out of 15 wins the match. So that's the basic concept. Then they took it inside. They built a stadium. And, in fact, last year they built a stadium and it was destroyed. And it took them a year to relaunch because they went back. So there is a live audience in the stadium for this golf. And the players are playing off of natural grass for all the full shots. And then when they get to within 50 yards of where the green is, then they play to that artificial surface. So it's a combination of a variety of things. And really, the genesis of this, I believe, although they don't say that, I think the genesis of this is they're trying to tap into the sports wagering market because you're heavily encouraged to place wagers throughout the competition.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the way of the world right now. So when I pulled up the story from The Athletic on this, and Dan, I need you, and look, I understand golf, and I follow golf, but I need a little help here. I really do. They say that the matches are broken up into two sessions. The first session, nine holes of a three-man alternate shot format. The three players from each team alternate who tees off a hole, and then the three rotate who hits each shot from there. They're calling it triples. That's seemingly somewhat easy to understand. The second session, they say, is six holes of singles, where each hole is one-on-one for an entire hole with the three golfers rotating each hole. Help me out with that second part, the singles part. I'm not sure I grasp.
Just picture a mini Ryder Cup on Sunday. The Ryder Cup has singles on Sundays. In the case of the Ryder Cup, they have the full field playing. And here they have, and even though there's four players on the team, only three of them are competing in any one match. So tonight, Tiger and Rory will go head-to-head over six holes, the final six holes, and it'll be match play, Tiger against Rory. And that's why this is getting a lot of attention.
Yeah.
This is the week of Pebble Beach. This is when the public sort of wakes up to the fact that there is professional golf. And so what better scenario do you have than Tiger and Rory going head-to-head in singles to wrap up the competition?
That's awesome. So then whichever team has more points through 15 holes wins. Have we had any ties yet? Because I guess there is an overtime format as well.
I don't believe we've had any ties, but that's interesting as well because then they borrow from hockey. So if you win the match, your team gets 2 points over the course of the season, okay? If you tie the match but win in overtime, as in hockey, you get 1 point. And then if you lose the match, you don't get any points. So even there, they're borrowing from various sports. And I think the other, you know, I said the appeal is wagering. The other appeal is all the players are mic'd and there's going to be a lot of interaction between the players. It will be good for golf in the sense that it will bring out these personalities. For instance, tonight is the first time we get a chance to see Tom Kim. And Tom Kim is a personality master right now in the game. So he will be extremely entertaining. And there's going to be a lot of jabbing going on and things like that that you won't see in traditional golf.
So I like that a little bit. And here's, you know, piggybacking off that, I sent my dear friend in Las Vegas, who I just visited, this message. Said, Dan, I'm going to have to edit it, all right, for broadcast quality. But here we go. The message said this: it's total blanking blank that we can't watch football on Monday nights anymore until blanking September. But this is actually a nice fill-in. What I thought a couple weeks ago, I've seen this twice, I was drawn in. I haven't paid a lick of attention, Dan Reardon, to the LIV, you know, format. I've never even stayed with that 5 minutes. But this was interesting. It was compelling for a variety of reasons. You get to see a lot of the, you know, the technical geeky stuff, the swing speeds, the spin, all that stuff. That's kind of fun for someone like me who has somewhat of an understanding to it. But what you point out with the microphones, I think, is really important. And you do get a sense of players that have, you might not even know they have a personality the way they came off in this format, because you don't hear from them much on the PGA Tour. So I thought that was cool.
And it's an important consideration, Mark. If you're placing wagers, realize this competition skews heavily toward purely ball speed. In other words, these are not necessarily the guys that are playing the greatest golf, because you're playing from a level lie every shot you play. So it rewards distance. And,
right.
I suspect tonight you're going to see with Rory against Tiger, given the age difference and length, there's going to be times when Rory off the tee is going to have a 30, 40, 50-yard advantage over Tiger. And what has been interesting over the first few weeks of this is that the teams that have won have dominated on the par three holes. And that goes sort of against what the basic concept is. So there's a variety of things. I think the most fascinating thing about it, quite honestly, is the putting green. Because the putting green, which is artificial, is able to have the contours change from one hole to the next. So it's an actual physical golf hole.
Yeah.
But as opposed to a left or right putt, the same putt may on the next hole be right to left because they've changed the contours within the green. They're able to do weird things like that. And and that's, like I said, that's artificial grass. Off the tee, if they miss the fairway, they have grass in that area, in that facility, that is longer grass. So they play out of literally rough as they go through. It's a well-thought-out concept, and I think you correctly identified. I think they go on at 5:30 our time tonight. I think you correctly identified. This is filling a void. This is filling a niche. The PGA Tour is fully on board with this because Monday nights do not interfere with anything going on with the tour. And this is done in person. So when you see Rory and Tiger tonight, they are there. If Rory is playing at Pebble Beach, he'll leave from Palm Beach and head out to California to play in this event the rest of the week.
Yeah. Yeah, so when you say there, it's all at the SoFi Center, they call it, on the campus of Palm Beach State College in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. And it's got 250,000 square feet. You got 2,000 fans on match nights. It's an air-supported dome, all kinds of giant simulator screens. I mean, it's really cool. And, you know, I think a lot of us have gotten into some of the simulator golf when it is cold, and this is a good example of it this winter. So I thought it was a lot of fun, and I'm definitely going to check it out tonight after the show, Dan.
And if you want to see it in person, tickets are $160 for each match.
Well, that's on par with concerts. That's not that, you know, ridiculous when you think about it. Now, look, I mentioned LIV. Let's kind of close with this. Where are we with all of that? With LIV, a year and a couple of months ago, there was supposed to be somewhat of a merger. That's never happened. They're still going on with their, you know, schedule. But is it even something the PGA is worried about at this point?
Worried, I'd say no. Working on it, I would say yes. What happened to change all that is all of a sudden the PGA found $1 billion, more than $1 billion in investors, and they're no longer under the constraints of they have more money than we have.
Ah,
they do have
okay.
more than they have, but the PGA Tour isn't being pressured into doing anything. They're now negotiating on a level playing field, and the hang-up will always be what happens to the players that left when they come back. It's not where do we go with the LIV events or how do we handle that. How do we handle the players that left the PGA Tour. Do we let them back, and do we let them back under what circumstances? And it's still a work in progress.
You mentioned Pebble Beach. So the tour event from this past weekend had to be moved. That was supposed to be in California, right? Or is that an upcoming event?
That's the upcoming one. Tiger's event at L.A. Country Club, not at L.A., at Riviera, is going to be moved to San Diego to play again. The Genesis event will be played at Torrey Pines. So they move the two of them. And one thing I'd say to look for at the early start of the year, I know everybody's going to talk about Scottie Scheffler playing this week. He's back from the hand injury. I think the name to watch, at least through the first quarter of the year, is Jordan Spieth. He had significant wrist surgery that he's been battling problems with for over two years or so. And Jordan still moves the needle when it comes to viewers. So watch to see what Jordan does this week at Pebble Beach. He's been successful there in the past. And follow him through the first quarter of the year. I think he's the most interesting name to watch.
I love it. All right, thanks, Dan. Thanks for the primer, if you will, on everything that's going on with the simulator golf, which is really kind of fun. And if you haven't checked it out, it will be on ESPN TGL, the new golf league. Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy tonight. Dan Reardon, always great. Thank you so much.
Enjoyed it, Mark.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Yes, we are left with some time here to dip into some of the audio. I played a couple of these earlier. Look, I got to start with Selena Gomez, who's not very happy.
Say that I'm so sorry. Only people are getting attacked.
She is bawling her eyes out because she feels like innocent migrants are being swept up by Trump and children and women. She's not really focusing on the rapists and the murderers and things along those lines. But she's more in line with, I'm guessing, Selena Gomez watches MSNBC. I thought this was interesting. You got a reporter that's doing a story about the undocumented aliens.
And all of this comes on the backdrop of all of those ICE raids that we've been talking about. I want you guys to take a look at this video that we saw just this morning from the DEA, ATF, and Homeland Security investigators out of the Rocky Mountain Division in Colorado. There you can see a raid that was conducted this morning. They say that they were targeting a Venezuelan gang, and they were able to seize cash weapons and actually made an arrest of, quote, 50 illegal aliens right there. Alex?
Yep, we call them undocumented immigrants, but that, again, was in the release from the DEA.
I don't even know if I need to play any more audio, if I need to say anything. That speaks so many volumes by itself, right? The anchor is so concerned. There's no concern on the part of the—I don't even know who that was, and it's irrelevant, right? No concern on her part at all about, you know, people like Lake and Riley being raped and murdered, Venezuelan gangs taking over in Colorado. There's no worry about that. It's just all the innocent victims that might be swept up, of which we have no examples of, right?
Uh-huh.
Did we have a bunch of women and children that were on those planes to Colombia that got sent back originally? And then the guy's like, okay, you're right, Trump. You're going to kill us if we don't cooperate, right? That's what's going on out there. And then there's J.D. Vance. Somebody... David Strom at HotAir.com, one of our favorites, right? He wrote this. Now, I don't know. Sometimes people who write, you know, the blogs, et cetera, they don't do the headlines. But Dave said, I just witnessed a murder of Margaret Brennan by J.D. Vance.
When you talked to us in August, you said, I don't think we should abandon anybody who's been properly vetted and helped us. Do you stand by that?
Well, Margaret, I don't agree that all these immigrants or all these refugees have been properly vetted. In fact, we know that there are cases of people who allegedly were properly vetted and then were literally planning terrorist attacks on our country. That happened during the campaign, if you may remember. So clearly not all of these foreign nationals have been properly vetted.
No, but there are 30,000 people in the pipeline, Afghan refugees.
But my primary concern as the vice president, Margaret, is to look after the American people. And now that we know...
So you got to listen to what she said there at the end. She's like, she's trying to, and so condescending. Listen to what she goes, so no.
My primary concern as the vice president, Margaret, is to look after the American people. And now that we know that we have vetting problems with a lot of these refugee programs, we absolutely cannot unleash thousands of unvetted people into our country.
These people are not vetted. These people are vetted.
No, they're not. And J.D. Vance, no, they're not vetted. But oh my God, talk about agenda journalism, right? I'd like to guide Margaret Brennan into a soundbite here that will round out Audio Cut of the Day by Stephen A. Smith. Look, he's a sports guy. I don't agree with him on a lot of things, especially on NFL stuff. But boy, he sure makes a whole lot of sense here talking about things that make a whole lot of sense.
Here's the deal. The man was impeached twice. He was convicted on 34 felony counts. And the American people still said, he's closer to normal than what we see.
Exactly.
Left. That's what they're saying. He's closer to normal. Why? Because something that pertains, when you talk about the transgender community, for example, and you're talking about the issues that pertain to less than 1% of the population, the Democratic Party came across as if that was a priority more so than the other issues. What voter out there can look at the Democratic Party at this moment in time and say, there's a voice for us, somebody that speaks for us, that goes up on Capitol Hill and fights the fights that we want them fighting on our behalf? They didn't do that. And that's why their behinds are home, and that man is back into the White House, and they want to sit up there and talk. You look at the networks right now, they're talking about him. Look at it. This is the latest. Look at him. Here he goes again. Well, you know what here he goes again means? He's doing what he said he was going to do.
And it's really not that complicated. That's the thing. Even Stephen A. Smith can take a look back and say, oh, I think a lot of these things were promised, and the American people said yes. Wrapping up on Monday. Sue, have a great night.
You too.
We're back tomorrow. I know Michael Goodwin from the New York Post will be on the show on Tuesday.
Get more at 971talk.com.